Welcome to the Just Ingredients podcast. I'm Cara Lynn, and here we talk all things nourishing to the mind, body, and soul. This is a place where you can find just good ingredients to life. Dr. Ben Lynch is the best-selling author of Dirty Genes and president of Seeking Health, a company that helps educate both the public and health professionals on how to overcome genetic dysfunction. He received his doctorate in naturopathic medicine from Bastyr University. He lives in Seattle, Washington, with his wife and three sons. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, I actually am really honored to have our guest on the show. It is Dr. Ben Lynch, and I have been following him on Instagram for a couple years. He talks about our genes. He talks about MTHFR variant. And what intrigued me about him is that I have the MTHFR gene variant. And so it just has intrigued me. I have wanted Dr. Ben Lynch on our show for, like 140 episodes. And so we finally got him. And so thank you, Dr. Lynch, so much for being here today.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Will you tell my listeners just a little bit about yourself, your background, and maybe why you got involved in this?
So my undergrad studies was in cellular molecular biology, and I was pre-med after switching my degrees about 8 times. I mean, what do you know when you're 18, right?
Right.
And then end of my junior year, I realized I didn't want to be a conventional medical doctor. I would suck as a surgeon for various reasons. And so I up and left the university end of my junior year, backpacked around South Pacific and Southeast Asia for an entire year. And at the end of my trip in India, of course, you get sick in India. To give you some framework, I was 215 pounds. 4% body fat because I used to row for the Huskies, University of Washington, Huskies, boys in the boat. Pretty cool.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. But I was super lean, super fit. And then in India, I was 165 pounds.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, and my hair was down to my shoulders. But I got really sick. And it was there that a local East Indian took me. He goes, oh, I got somewhere to take you. And he took me to this Ayurvedic practitioner. And I was like, Ayur what? And I didn't really care. I mean, I thought I was going to die. I felt horrible. And within 30, 40 minutes of taking whatever herbs that they gave me, I was like 68% better within an hour or so. Long story short, led me to naturopathic medicine, which led me to Bastyr, which led me to, that's what I want to do. So I got my degree from Bastyr as a naturopathic physician. I maintained my licensure there in the state of Washington as a primary care physician. I got three boys and my wife and married for 23 years, I think.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I should know, right?
Don't let your wife listen to this.
Yeah. I grew up on a horse ranch. We had a thoroughbred ranch and we bred hunters and jumpers. And it was then as a child, I would see some of the mares were infertile and my mom and vets would do some treatments. And I always thought that it was so interesting that I would just observe and I would see that these brood mares would be barren and couldn't conceive or they would abort. And then with some treatments, they would have a baby. And I always thought that was so fascinating. And then there was one day I was years later after graduating from Bastyr, I got a question from a customer. I used to have a company called Healthy Goods back in the day, where I used to sell a variety of health products that were not my own. And a customer emailed me. She goes, what do I need to do for bipolar? And I was quickly, you know, fish oil and avoiding dairy. And I was like, you know, it's been a few years since I graduated. I want to see the current research. So I go to PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, where all research is kind of stored for everybody to see. Not all research, filtered research. So I type in folic acid, bipolar. And the first thing that pops up was bipolar is associated with MTHFR variations or MTHFR genetic variations. And I was like, what the hell is an MTHFR thing? Because we didn't study any genetics. I mean, this was back in 2010. And so I typed in back. So I read the paper and it said that bipolar was associated with MTHFR. It had to do with folate metabolism. I was like, okay, folic acid, folate. I thought there was just folic acid. What do you mean by folate? And then MTHFR, I put that back into the National Library of Medicine just by itself. And I actually pulled this open because it's so fascinating. I typed in PubMed. In PubMed search bar, I typed in MTHFR. I got 8,500 results.
Oh, wow.
And so we'll get into this later, but that's how I discovered it.
Interesting. So I've had so many listeners and followers with questions about the MTHFR gene, because every once in a while I'll mention it on Instagram and then it just opens this floodgate of questions. And so I told my team, I'm like, the expert on this is Dr. Ben Lynch. Bring him on. He's the one that needs to explain this to everybody. So I'm wondering if we can just start at the very basics, because I'm sure there's some people that still haven't even heard of this gene variant. And so will you explain to them what the MTHFR gene variant is?
Yeah. And I'll preface it with this. You know, I started a website called MTHFR.net back in 2011. And I beat this drum for a decade. And I traveled the globe presenting at conferences around the world. I was known as the MTHFR guy. And after a decade, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of done with this. And it's funny, as soon as I try to be done,
people like us bring you back to it. And you wrote a book that talks about it. Like,
yeah. And the book was published in 2018. So it's like, come on, people. Yeah. But I guess there was some guy who got on Joe Rogan and started talking about it. And he's been talking about it. All these other people are talking about it. So here we are talking about it again.
It's sort of a trendy topic on social media. So you're the expert. Yeah, that's why you're going to talk about it.
Yeah. And it's cool. I'm glad that it's in the spotlight again. I think it's funny because I was pushing so hard over 10 years ago. It's like, people, this is important. And it is important. So MTHFR is a gene in the human body. There's about 18,000 different genes. And before you freak out and be like, oh, this is going to be talking about genetics, I'm out of here, we'll just keep it as this statement. How many professions are there in the world? You got lawyers, you got doctors, you got janitors, you have school teachers, you have a variety of different professions. That doesn't freak you out. A gene simply has a job to do. Sometimes a gene has multiple jobs to do. So think about, you have 18,000 different employees, basically, in your body. And you are the boss of those employees. Yes, these employees are, you know, programmed a certain way, but you ultimately are in charge of all of them. When you go to the doctor and you check, you know, the family history, you know, what's your family history of your dad and your mom and your brother and your immediate grandparents, and you're checking cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, and every time you check a box, you're like, crap, I'm next.
Yep.
But my whole goal with educating and informing people about MTHFR is that it is one gene out of many, and you can't ignore the whole picture. Stop zooming in so narrow and think broadly. But that said, MTHFR is a gene. It has a particular job to do. Its particular job is very important. And its job is to make the number one form of folate that's circulating in your blood and your brain and all your organs right now. And that form of folate is called methylfolate. You hear about folic acid all the time. You might also hear about folate. You might think these terms are synonymous. They're not. It's, you hear truck or you hear car, and you've got a Ford truck, a Tesla truck, a Chevy truck, a GMC truck. These are all different types of trucks, but they're still classified as trucks. So with folate, methylfolate consists of, or should consist of, over 80% of that circulating folate in your blood. If you have a minority amount of methylfolate circulating in your blood compared to other types of folates like folic acid, then you are not well. It's that simple. You're not doing well at all. And why is that? Because methylfolate supports a process in your body called methylation. So methylation is simply a biochemical process in your body that has a ton of different jobs to do by turning genes on, turning them off, getting rid of arsenic, mercury, breaking down histamine, breaking down dopamine, norepinephrine, supporting the developing baby, you know, supporting development of creatine and phosphatidylcholine. And you're like, creatine, that's a supplement. Well, yeah, creatine is a supplement, but 80% of your body's methylation pathway, which is supported by the product of the MTHFR gene of methylfolate, 80% of that methylation is used to produce creatine and then this other compound called phosphatidylcholine. And what's phosphatidylcholine is the compound that your cell membranes use heavily to make a cell membrane. So we have trillions of cells all over your, all your skin, your eyes, your hair, you know, every one of your organs. Everything requires billions of different cells, and every one of these billions of cells uses phosphatidylcholine, and methylation is a major part of that. And a major part of methylation comes from methylfolate, which comes from the MTHFR enzyme. And this is why the MTHFR gene variants are so, so important to understand, because methylation is associated with everything. It's the cornerstone. I'm trying to think of an example here, but if Washington, D.C., I don't like saying this, but say had a major power outage and the entire government shut down for a year, well, maybe the world would be better. But let's just say
that would be chaos.
Yeah, let's just say it would be chaos. Okay. You hit the epicenter, you're going to have chaos. So if you have an MTHFR gene variation that is pretty significant, and you are not supporting it well through diet, lifestyle, and food and nutrition and so on, then there's going to be chaos throughout your entire body. And it's going to be different for every person. And it's going to be different for every person because there's 18,000 other genes or so. You know, researchers say there's 16,000. Some say there's 22,000. It's like, how do you not know at, in 2024 exactly how many genes a human body has? But yeah, they keep changing it.
Interesting. So, okay, well, you explained that so well. So thank you for the analogies and everything. So I have so many questions. Every time someone asks me, or I say I have the MTHFR variant, they say, which one? So there's two of them, correct? And, or probably way more than two, but two main ones. There we go. So can you tell me about those and what the difference is, or why it matters? Why do they ask me which one I have?
They ask you which one you have because maybe it's trendy. Maybe that's what they've learned. It's what people talk about. The reality is, I'm looking at this website called Gene Cards right now, and there are 676 known genetic variations of MTHFR.
Maybe there's two, because two only showed up on the blood work panel that I did. It said you had one or the other.
So there are MTHFR gene variants that are very, very common, that do absolutely nothing in terms of the alteration in terms of how it performs. Before we talk about the two variants, let's talk about what a variant can do to a particular gene. This is important. This is my hand, and this is my normal functioning hand. Well, I don't like to use normal. Let's say typical.
Okay.
It's an important term to say. You don't have normal, you have typical. And so this is a typical hand position for catching a ball or whatever else. Somebody throws you your keys. This is how you catch it. So the likelihood of me catching something is pretty high by having my hand shaped like this. Now, if I have a shape of my hand like this, my ability to catch something goes down. I can still do it, but it's not as good. Then if it's like this, it's even less. So genetic variations, most of them, key point, most genetic variations do absolutely nothing in terms of how the gene is programmed to produce its enzyme. So the gene can have a genetic variant, and that is the blueprint for making the enzyme. It's the enzyme of MTHFR that does the work. It's the enzyme of the MTHFR gene that is altered in its functional capacity to produce methylfolate because of its shape change. Enzymes perform work in the human body because of their shapes. They attach things, they capture things, they bind things, they move things. And so with the MTHFR genetic variant, the 1298 and the 677, these are the top two ones talked about. They alter the shape of the enzyme, of the MTHFR enzyme, a little bit in different parts of the enzyme. Now, what do those numbers have to do with anything? The size of your MTHFR gene is 656 amino acids long. Now, amino acids, you know, help shape the enzyme itself. And at position 677, there's a switch from one amino acid to another. Yeah, so it's a cytosine to a thymidine. So that it changes, and that changes the shape. At MMGFR 1298, there's another shape change. And so I was hesitating there because amino acids have, I think, three base pairs or what have you. It gets messy, but it doesn't matter. So, but that's what those gene variations mean. So where in the enzyme is there a potential structural change? So that at MTHFR 677, if you have one switch of a cytosine to a thymidine, you're known as having a MTHFR heterozygous 677 variant. And that changes the enzyme's shape and its function. It reduces its ability to make methylfolate by about 20%. Now, if you have two 677 thymidines versus cytosines, you inherit one from your mom, one from your dad, then you have a roughly 60-70% reduced ability to produce methylfolate. So what does that mean? That means you have about 30-ish percent ability to make methylfolate compared to what's typical.
Okay.
So if someone does not have an MTHFR gene variant at 677 or any of them, they say, let's have a 100% ability to make methylfolate. There's no slowdown. But if you have 677, it's reduced significantly. 1298, this is a different animal. And the research on 1298 is interesting. This is what they call it, the terminus end. It binds SAMe, which tells MTHFR to stop producing methylfolate. And so if you have a genetic variation in the 1298 position, the binding of SAMe, which is a methyl donor, is reduced. So that tells me that the MTHFR enzyme could be working faster. But it's weird because the research says if you have an MTHFR 1298 variation, the enzyme works about 20% slower. So I'm a bit confused on that. But regardless, the 1298 is less significant than the 677 in terms of what it does to your ability to make methylfolate. If you have a combination of one 1298 and one 677, like me, I've inherited a 1298 from my mom or dad, I don't know which one, and I inherited a 677 from my mom or my dad. And it might be possible that I inherited the 677 and the 1298 from one of my parents and not from the others. Well, how could that be? What people don't talk about is I've actually had clients in the past who had two 677s and one 1298 because one parent can pass both. It's very, very rare to find a person who has two 1298s and two 677s. Why? Because they die in utero.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I was just reading a research paper, which is why I was late to getting on the call with you. It's interesting. I've talked about this before too. MTHFR variants are increasing in the population. In Japan, people over 80 years old, they didn't really find a homozygous 677 variant. It didn't exist. So they probably died in utero. Now, with supplementation and medical interventions, mothers and fathers who have kids, you know, or are pregnant, we supplement. We use steroids, we use hormones, we force a pregnancy to term. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's what we're doing. I mean, I sell prenatal vitamins at Seeking Health, you know, so it's more of an awareness type of conversation than saying it's right or wrong. You can't say it's right or wrong. It's an awareness. So we are increasing the prevalence of MTHFR genetic variations in the population through IVF treatments, prenatal supplementation, forcing pregnancies to term with steroids and anticoagulants. And what happens is, parents, let's say you had a very difficult pregnancy and you were on all these anticoagulants and we were on steroids and hormones and 4 or 5 milligrams of folic acid. We'll talk about that too. But let's say you do all that and you have a beautiful baby, you celebrate, and then what happens? You stop all that. So now you have potentially a genetically inferior baby that is very susceptible to environmental influences and chemicals and the crap food that we have everywhere. And what are we seeing? We're seeing ADD, ADHD, autism, all these conditions on the rise. We're seeing obesity everywhere. I have a term that I, you know, it's unnatural deselection. We are making ourselves genetically inferior beings through these types of supports during pregnancy because we stop at the delivery of the baby. We don't continue nourishing the baby throughout of life. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying if you had a difficult pregnancy, you really, really need to be mindful to nourish that kid all throughout its life and to educate them and inform them why they need to be doing certain things, which then leads into the concept of dirty genes.
So interesting. Yeah, lots of questions. So first of all, I have double of the 677. And so most likely one from my mom, one from my dad. But let's talk about some of these health conditions. You mentioned them a little bit when you said like these kids with ADHD and autism, and you talked about bipolar. So are our mental health issues maybe because of this variant? Are all these different conditions maybe because of this variant?
I will take that same statement and I will say all these conditions you are more vulnerable to because of this variant. Having the MTHFR variant does not equal that you will have bipolar or infertility or any of these things. It means that you're vulnerable. Why are you vulnerable? You're vulnerable because you have a reduced ability to make methylfolate, right? So in your situation, you have around a 70-80% reduced capacity to make methylfolate. So do I with my 677 and 1298. My childhood, my young adulthood, my early adulthood, or even middle. I didn't find out I had MTHFR until 2011, and I was born in 74. And when I found out, I was terrified, first of all. And then when I started learning about it, I was like, oh, this is just a functional thing. If I supplement with methylfolate, or if I change my diet, or if I eliminate things that slow it down, like folic acid and nitrous oxide and all those other things, then I still have a 30% capacity of my MTHFR enzyme working. So if you don't overwork your MTHFR enzyme and you nourish it through healthy lifestyle and food and so on, you're fine. You're totally fine. So it's like the American College of Medical Gynecology or ACMG or whatever it's called. They don't like me. They despise me. A lot of medical organizations don't like me. And they don't like me because they're actually not hearing me. They're just reacting. It's very important to listen fully versus just immediately react to things. And the American College of Medical Genetics, they don't like, and they say flat out, testing for MTHFR is a waste of time. It is not associated with any condition in a linear relationship. And I will say they are right. Celiac disease. If you have celiac, you have 1 to 3 different genetic variations that you are very, very at risk of eating gluten. You eat gluten, you're in trouble.
Right.
Cystic fibrosis, genetic variation, boom, you have cystic fibrosis. MTHFR genetic variation, boom. Oh, yeah. Okay. There's no real set genetic problem here that we're seeing. So by that statement, then we don't need to test for it. And I learned this from Dr. Tom O'Brien, who had a great point. Imagine you are climbing a rope. You're not free climbing like that crazy guy of Solo, but you have a rope and you're 300 feet above the ground and your rope is 100 feet long. And at the 63rd foot long part of that rope, there's a fray, and it's a pretty significant fray. And your buddy sees it up at the top and you're like, your rope is compromised, pal. It's like, okay, let's not put that over that anchor point. We'll have that, you know, and we'll tie a different knot. We'll double it up. We'll do something to strengthen that. That's an awareness that you have a vulnerability. You take action if you have a vulnerability. You ignore that vulnerability and they move that vulnerable part of rope to the edge of a cliff where it's sharper. That rope snaps. Person falls to their death. And you might say, oh, that's pretty severe to equate MTHFR genetic variations to that. No, it's really not, because all these people who have the MTHFR genetic variation, 677, double like yourself, compound heterozygous, what they call mine, 1 of 1298, 1 of 677, we are quite vulnerable. And understanding that we are vulnerable allows us to take action and be empowered. Now, to go back to answer your question, sometimes I go on these tangents because it's important to preface, but I'm back in PubMed. I typed in MTHFR. I'm just going to read from the first citation down. MTHFR, cardiovascular risks, all their diseases in this one paper, lipedema, diabetic retinopathy, hypertension, gynecology, methotrexate treatment in rheumatoid arthritis patients, pharmacogenetic relevance of MTHFR polymorphisms. What's that mean? That means if you have an MTHFR genetic variation and the doctors prescribe you certain medications, are you at risk for some issues of having an MTHFR genetic variation if you are given that medication? And I will say two right off the top. Methotrexate, 100%. Nitrous oxide, known as laughing gas, 100%. If you have an MTHFR gene variant, so you, Carlin, you need to avoid both of those. It is best to avoid both of those. In the event that you have to have either methotrexate or laughing gas, then there's interventions that you can do to support the horrible consequences of both of those. I struggle to think how many people with rheumatoid arthritis or undergoing cancer treatments who are taking methotrexate actually die because third leading cause of death is doctors. And this is a big one. Laughing gas, all that is reduces anxiety. That's all it does. So if you go to the dentist or you're having surgery and they force you to have laughing gas or tell you to take laughing gas, it is actually more for the health professional to make their job easier to perform work on you or your kid. Let's just knock them out so they don't bother me. But at this point in time, I would say, you know, take an edible.
That is really interesting because I didn't realize that about laughing gas. And years ago, when my kids were little and I wasn't in the health world, they had laughing gas and they have the MTHFR variants as well. So this is crazy to me.
What did you notice with them? Did you notice that they were really slow to come out?
They were really slow to come out. So that makes sense now.
I don't like bringing this up, but I've had a number of parents tell me in desperation that their kids or their older parents or grandparents were struggling big time because of the laughing gas. You know, imagine you're in a 6-hour surgery or something and they just keep that mask on you. They're supposed to regulate it, but you know, they get busy and they do things and they're not really paying attention as they should be. So the exposure is very significant. What laughing gas does is it basically destroys vitamin B12. It literally oxidizes it. And if you oxidize your B12, methylfolate and methyl, hear that? Methylcobalamin and methylfolate. And a lot of you know that methylcobalamin form of B12 is the better form of B12. Most of you know that. Mm-hmm. You know that cyanocobalamin is the dog crap version of B12.
Yep.
Methyl is the Rolls Royce. Folic acid is a dog crap version of folate. Methylfolate is the Rolls Royce. And so when you have methylfolate and methylcobalamin supporting methylation, everything is good. And so what happens with nitrous oxide is the methylcobalamin gets ruined. Methylfolate and methylcobalamin are a tag team. They are a dynamic duo. They need both in order to function. Otherwise, you have what's called methyl trapping. And then you have homocysteine, which is we'll get into it later, but that becomes a problem. And then you can actually have significant dementia. And in case of these parents with their kids who had laughing gas, I'm belaboring this a little bit because it's important. These kids were in a coma and never woke up.
Oh, wow. That's really sad.
Horrible.
It goes back to your point though, that it's an awareness thing. Knowing you have the MTHFR just makes you aware to be able to do different or better for your body. Me knowing I have it, I'm very aware that I need the methylated B vitamins because I didn't know I had it years ago when I suffered with depression and actually attempted suicide because my depression was so bad. And then when we finally found a doctor that helped me, it was purely like my B9, my B12, all of my B vitamins were just, they were in the tank. Let's take a quick break to hear from our show sponsor. I want to tell all my incredible listeners where I'm going to be on April 19th through 20th here in Utah. Just Ingredients is a proud sponsor of the Be Healthy Utah Natural Health and Wellness Conference. We have been working with this event since 2019. It has now grown to over 200 vendors, 35 plus speakers, with food demos and interactive classes. The entire conference is all on natural health. I will be there and would love to meet you. I will be speaking at 4 p.m. on Friday the 19th. Use the discount code JUST40, J-U-S-T-40, for 40% off the $37 ticket price of the two-day live event. For those who don't live in the area and can't make it, there is an online version of all the speakers that will be out a few weeks after the conference. Use JUST40 for that as well to get 40% off the online version of the conference. We love what this conference does to help educate the public on how to get and stay well naturally. Hope to see you there. Go to BeHealthyUtah.com and get your tickets today. Now back to the show. Let's actually talk about really quick, why does MTHFR play a part in mental health? Purely because of the B vitamins?
Well, that's a big part of it. Yeah, I mean, remember the job of the MTHFR enzyme, which is produced by the MTHFR gene, is to make methylfolate. Now, I thought that you couldn't get methylfolate from food back in the day. That's wrong. You can get methylfolate from food. You can get methylfolate from liver, meat, red meat, especially, and leafy green vegetables. Folic acid is not found in nature, by the way. Folic acid was created, I don't want to waste time on it, but it's completely man-made. It is not recognized immediately by the human body. It has to be transformed by a gene called dihydrofolate reductase. And so people will incorrectly state that I cannot take folic acid because I have an MTHFR gene variant. Humans are not designed to take folic acid, period, regardless of if having an MTHFR variant or not, because MTHFR gene is down here about 7 genes below where folic acid gets introduced in the folate pathway. So dihydrofolate reductase enzyme is the primary gene that handles your folic acid. And the researchers looked at folic acid and the dihydrofolate reductase enzyme in mice. Mice have the ability to convert folic acid into dihydrofolate, which then can move down into methylfolate super easily. No problem. In humans, we're about 1% functional activity in our DHFR enzyme compared to mice. So us doing research on mice and directly equating that to human is incorrect. And so all this folic acid in the diet is causing massive issues. And I have research papers on that. We're going to get to that too. But I wanted to say that real quick. Now, with MTHFR and mental illness, remember that if your methylation system is so important that it handles turning on and off genes, and you have 18,000 genes in the human body, and methylation turns them on and off, you don't have people doing their jobs all the time, their entire life that they're awake around the world. That would be very inefficient. They would die of exhaustion. They'd run out of resources. It's the same for your own genes. Your genes turn off when they're not needed. They turn on when they're needed. And so most of your genes are always methylated. When your gene is methylated, it's turned off. It is not producing any enzyme. So most of the time, your MTHFR gene is methylated. It's not turned on unless it's needed to be turned on. That's to conserve resources. Otherwise, you'd be eating all day long. You would be skin and bones because you'd just be running out of resources. And so when a stimulus is triggered to make more methylfolate, then that happens and it turns back off again. So with mental illness, if your methylation status, in your case, for example, you had low folate, you had low B12, and then by result, you had high homocysteine, most likely.
I did.
Okay. So high homocysteine, it will shatter your ability to make dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine, and it will increase glutamate, which increases anxiety and destruction of your brain. It will increase histamine, which causes headaches, irritability, insomnia, like glutamate. So you have these bad, high levels of neurotransmitters, and you have very low levels of the ones that help us with motivation, libido, healthy mood, memory, learning. And so then, yeah, you struggle. And then let's say you went to the doctor and you had dental work done and you were given laughing gas in that situation. And then let's say they prescribed you more folic acid instead of methylfolate, and you weren't eating. I mean, you're a vegetarian, but you weren't eating veggies. You were more of a carbitarian. Let's face it. A lot of vegetarians were carbitarians. I tried being a vegetarian for a while to see my health, and I felt horrible, but I did it wrong. I mean, Novak Djokovic is doing pretty good being a vegetarian. So homocysteine really eliminates your body's ability to make neurotransmitters and to process them and balance them. And why is that? Because high levels of homocysteine are associated with lower levels of methylfolate, which comes from the MTGFR enzyme. And remember, you have methylfolate and methylcobalamin as a tag team duo. You need both. So if you're just supplementing with methylfolate and you have low amounts of methylcobalamin or low amounts of B12, then you could be still struggling with mental illness. And it keeps going. Let's say you have sufficient methylfolate and you have sufficient B12, but you're still struggling. Your homocysteine is still high despite you taking B12 and folate. Well, how in the hell can that be? Because at the intersection of B12 and of folate, of the methyl forms, there's an enzyme that is very, very sensitive to what's called oxidative stress. And oxidative stress, we all know as a term of called free radicals. Free radicals, if you have high levels of free radicals, then that enzyme turns off. Mm-hmm. And so homocysteine levels are not recycled or lowered. It actually will be converting homocysteine into glutathione, which is your body's primary antioxidant to get rid of these free radicals or oxidative stressors, which is a beautiful system, by the way. So if you're struggling with high homocysteine and you've tried methylfolate, you've tried methylcobalamin, they're not working. You've tried choline, you've tried betaine, still not working. You've tried B6, still not working. You've tried zinc, still not working. You've got to add glutathione. You've got to add, significant levels of glutathione as the S-acetyl form of glutathione is the most stable. And bioptrin is the compound that is not talked about by people. Oh, there's so much to share. It's unbelievable. Bioptrin is called a cofactor. And so enzymes require cofactor. I'm surprised we haven't talked about this yet. That's on me. So cofactors make the enzyme actually able to do the work. You have a car in your driveway. And if your car is an electric car, if there's no charge in the battery, it don't go.
Right.
If you got a gas or diesel powered car, it's not going. But they're fully functional. They're just not going. So if you have a fully functional MTGFR enzyme, no variants at all, you can have an MTGFR type low activity if you have low levels of this cofactor. And a cofactor, again, makes the MTGFR enzyme perform. So if you're low in riboflavin, the MTGFR enzyme is compromised. It can't perform.
Hmm.
And so if you have an MTGFR 677 homozygous variant like yourself or compound like I do, or even if you don't have any MTGFR genetic variations, you've done genetic testing, you're like, God, I swore I would have the MTGFR gene variant. I've got all these symptoms. My homocysteine is sky high. I've got mood issues. I got depression issues. I had recurrent miscarriages. Oh, yeah, I was put on laughing gas. I'm hypothyroid. I'm deficient in vitamin B2. I'm taking high dose folic acid. You created, unknowingly, having a very significant MTGFR pseudo variation in your body because you got it dirty. That's a concept of dirty genes. The concept is simply you can have a genetic variation born, which increases your vulnerability to things, but you can also create your own vulnerability of your own MTGFR gene by adding these things that conventional medicine is telling you to do, to take 5 milligrams of folic acid. You're hypothyroid, you're low in vitamin B2, you're taking laughing gas, you're a vegetarian, you're not eating red meat, and you're not supplementing with folates and B12s that are high quality. Now you have an MTGFR gene variant worse than mine and Carolyn's because you've dirtied your MTGFR enzyme to the point where it can't function, even though you don't have a gene variant.
Wow, that is a lot of info and you explained it so well, but I want to touch upon folic acid for a minute because folic acid is in everything enriched in America. So enriched flour, so your pastas, your flours, your baked goods, everything's got this folic acid in it. So this folic acid is hurting people without them even knowing.
Big time. I wanted to get research papers to hammer this point home. When I have a lot of arrows in my back, and that's totally cool. I'm fine with it.
We appreciate you standing up for the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. So in PubMed, there's a, and I'll send your team these links so you can put them in notes. High doses of folic acid induce a pseudo MTHFR syndrome. A 40-year-old Caucasian woman with a history of infertility was identified as having wild type, meaning no mutations, of MTHFR. She had 3 failed IVF treatments, and counseling for further oocyte donation included a device to take high doses of folic acid, 5 milligrams a day. That's typical. Prior to initiation of this in October 2017, she attended and found out she had increased level of homocysteine of 12 micromoles per liter. Let's pause there for a second. Homocysteine is not tested frequently enough by your doctors. That should be a standard across the board blood test. Yep. If you've never checked for homocysteine, go ask for it from your doctor. It's dirt cheap. If they give you hell and they're like, no, you don't need it, go online, find some online lab tests that you can order it, do it from home, get it done. And if your doctor won't do it, you're the boss of that doctor. Maybe it's time to fire that doctor and find a different one.
Yep.
You want your homocysteine, I'm just going to touch on this real quick. You want it between 7 and 9. So 7 micromoles per liter is kind of where you want it, 7 to 9. And kids typically have it lower because their growth rate is so high. So you will see a typically lower homocysteine in kids. The high range of homocysteine in blood tests is greater than 15. Ignore that. If it's greater than 9, you got to support methylation. You need some methylfolate there. You need some methylcobalamin, betaine, and so on, glutathione. So a further test in February showed an increase in homocysteine to 17. Oh, so wow. Remember, she was prescribed 5 milligrams of folic acid. At the onset of that, she had a homocysteine of 12. Now, 4 months later, in February, it increased to 17.
Oh, that's terrible.
Folic acid was stopped. Folic acid was stopped, and she was treated with 500 micrograms of methylfolate. 5 milligrams of folic acid contributed to a significant increase of homocysteine. She stopped that. She took a fraction of methylfolate, 500 micrograms, okay, important, and that supported methylation. After 5 days of treatment, her homocysteine dropped to a baseline level of 8.
Wow. That's incredible. Why do we keep adding folic acid to everything? I mean, they're still in prenatals. People are taking prenatals with folic acid. People are eating white flour every day folic acid.
You don't want to hear my answer. Okay. You really don't.
We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. People need to be empowered to know what folic acid does, they need to make their own choices.
You are in charge of your own health. It is up to you to be self-empowered. It's up to you. I'm curious, did you finally go to a good doctor who identified you at MTHFR and then got you on the program, or what happened?
So listen to this. I went for 2 years trying to find a doctor because I was like, okay, I know I wasn't always like this and something happened and I knew the body could heal. But back then, this was like 17 years ago, we didn't have Google and everything to, you know, pop up all these studies.
Right.
And so for 2 years, I went to doctor after doctor who just said, oh, we don't know how to heal depression or antidepressants are your best thing. And I was like, I know the body can heal. So I finally found a naturopathic doctor that was like, did perfect. All the testing and figured out all my root causes and the MTHFR and the B vitamins and all of that, my homocysteine levels, all that played a huge part in it.
I wonder if I trained that doctor.
I wonder if you did. I should find out. Well, okay, so people need to be empowered and know maybe if they're dealing with mental health issues, if they're dealing with bipolar, if they're dealing with some of these things, to maybe go look and see if they have this MTHFR variant, to be aware so that they know how to treat their body better. And so I do want to ask you, though, we touched upon the folic acid, which we could do hours and hours on, but I do want to talk to you about glutathione, though, because glutathione is our master antioxidant. It's the best antioxidant to help the liver with detoxing. And so those that deal with the MTHFR variant might have a little issue with detoxing, correct?
There's a lot of information that is, I would say, stretched about MTHFR genetic variations and what it does.
Okay.
The MTHFR gene's job is to make the MTHFR enzyme. The MTHFR enzyme's job is to make methylfolate. That's it. Now, methylfolate teams up with methylcobalamin and supports methylation, and that goes on and does thousands of different things. You could make indirect associations saying that MTHFR is associated with thousands of different things in your body, but it's only associated really with levels of methylfolate. Okay. So direct association is what I like to do, because if you do direct association, then you are more effective and targeted with your interventions. So
makes sense.
So does MTHFR have any bearing on glutathione? Yes. Indirectly. There are other genes that have a direct effect on glutathione. There are environmental exposures that have a direct effect on your glutathione. Mold, mycotoxins from mold directly inhibit your gene's ability, a different genes. It's like a glutathione synthesizing glutathione. It inhibits the ability to convert N-acetylcysteine or cysteine into glutathione. So when people say, oh, you just take NAC to support your glutathione levels, that's the same as saying you can take folic acid to support your methylfolate levels. You have people in those camps. Mm. That is so inaccurate. You might be able to convert folic acid into methylfolate. It's super slow. The DHFR enzyme in the human body can only handle 200 micrograms of folic acid at a time. And that's if you don't have a genetic variation in there. And DHFR variations are pretty significant. That you could have a genetic variation in the glutathione synthase enzyme, which reduces your ability to convert cysteine into glutathione. And then there's other things that consequences of that. So mold, even if you don't have a genetic variation in glutathione synthase enzyme, mycotoxins stop that enzyme from functioning for some reason. And I actually met the lady at one of my conferences who actually identified that from research. She goes, oh yeah, I wrote that paper. I was like, oh wow, cool.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that was neat. And so it just goes to show you that yes, some people can take NAC and feel great. Other people take NAC and they feel nothing. So you have to bypass these blocked roads because you have enzymes that ultimately get to the destination. So if my freeway here in my town is blocked, we do have side roads that we can get to. It takes longer, but you know, sometimes it's faster than waiting in traffic. So you take glutathione directly versus taking NAC, you got glutathione in your body. Done. That's great. And there's a lot of people saying, oh, if you take glutathione, you stop your enzyme's ability to produce glutathione. At that moment, remember, your genes produce enzymes when needed. Mm. So if there's sufficient glutathione levels in your body or sufficient methylfolate levels in your body, the enzymes don't need to work. They don't work. You stop taking methylfolate. You stop taking glutathione. Levels drop. The enzymes have sensors. There's like, oh, we got low glutathione. We got low methylfolate. Time to get to work. They start working again. So by saying that you're inhibiting your genes and your enzymes from producing their own glutathione and methylfolate, yes, for the moment. And that's good because then you have too much. So you don't want that. But glutathione is grossly needed because we are exposed to formaldehyde, chlorine, exhaust fumes. Our body makes its own hydrogen peroxide when it's fighting infections. And your immune system can be the thing that kills you if you have a very inflammatory viral infection. And so you need to calm your immune system down in those situations. And they were giving steroids for some aggressive viral infections out there to calm it down, where a vitamin D levels and glutathione levels, if they are sufficient, those help modulate and calm the immune system. And so if you take glutathione and you have a hyperactive immune function, you can calm it down. When you're stressed out, if you ever seen someone who has really, really stressed out and you haven't seen them in a while and they come back and see you, maybe there's a death in the family or a divorce or something, and their hair was just beautiful and dark, and then it's like full of gray later.
Mm-hmm.
So gray hairs, hydrogen peroxide. When you mix neurotransmitters and high levels of serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, when those break down, they release upon their breakdown massive amounts of hydrogen peroxide.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So all these people who are taking neurotropics or medications or Vyvanse or whatever these things are to increase dopamine levels, increase serotonin levels, SSRIs, you know, you're increasing these things, then you also have higher levels in your brain and then they break down. And if they break down, you're releasing all this hydrogen peroxide and you get brain fog. And you also get resistance to these medications because now you have so much hydrogen peroxide in your brain that your methylation cycle doesn't work anymore.
Wow.
The medications stop working. The doctors try switching you from one SSRI to a different antidepressant, not having any luck because your methylation system is broken because you don't have sufficient glutathione. Remember that MTHFR signal? So glutathione, I've had so many patients and clients and customers take glutathione and lights turn on in their head. There's different forms of glutathione. There's reduced glutathione, which you can read on the label. Reduced glutathione is okay. Now there's a different form of glutathione called S-acetylglutathione. And that is the best form because it's most stable by the body and it's not oxidized.
Okay, so good to know. So in reality, should all people be taking glutathione then? Or
that is a question that I learned as a student in school. If there is the word all in the question, and
don't
you,
answer you, it. Okay, false. Let's say this. I'll reword it. So glutathione is beneficial for a lot of people to be taking.
Yes.
And yes. So are methylated vitamins, B vitamins.
Yeah, methylated B vitamins are jet fuel. They take your body from a state where you are presently into a different state within minutes. Some people can handle that and their lights turns on in their brain, their mood turns on and they're like, wow, I'm amazing right now. Methylfolate is remarkable. It's phenomenal. But remember, methylfolate supports methylation. You can't direct where you want that methylfolate to take action. So you might have other enzymes in your body that are dirty and you might be making huge amounts of serotonin levels or dopamine levels as a consequence of taking methylfolate. So you have this huge lift in mood. You're like, oh my God, I feel great. The next day you take it again because, well, I mean, that's what you do with a supplement. You take it every day. Next day you wake, well, you think you're supposed to take it every day. You're not. Supplement is actually defined as to add to or enhance,
right?
Not defined as take it every day. Supplement companies want you to take it every day, but the reality is you shouldn't. But the next day you wake up and you feel pretty good. You have, you know, a little bit of brain fog and, you know, you're not as good as you were yesterday. So you take some more methylfolate. Bam. Within 5 minutes, you're like, oh my God. All right, I'm on. Let's go. Next day you wake up, you're on. You're still on. You're like, I'm still feeling good. Well, what'd you do yesterday? And what'd you do the day before? I took methylfolate. You took methylfolate again. You're already on. Now you're like, oh, I feel a little anxious. Oh, I'm just a little anxious. All right. And I'll deal with it. And you go through your day, just a little bit anxious, a little on edge. And you notice you snap a little bit periodically at someone. And someone's like, wow, well, you woke up on the wrong side of the bed today. And the next day you like, well, you know, you take more methylfolate. And now I'm feeling really on edge and my head kind of hurts. And you snap more. So long story short, you take methylfolate when you need it. You don't take it when you don't need it. And you get joint pain, you get irritability, you get headaches, you get migraines, you get insomnia. These are all side effects from too much methylfolate. I love methylfolate. Even though I have an MTHFR compound heterozygous variation, which reduces my ability to produce methylfolate by 70-ish percent. So I have about a 30% capacity to make my own. I eat meat. I don't drink alcohol very, very rarely. I get my vitamin B2. I'm not hypothyroid. I don't take methotrexate. I don't take laughing gas. So I don't need very much methylfolate. I only need, you know, it depends on the day. You know, some days I don't take any multivitamins at all. Today I had no methylfolate so far, none. And I had a protein-based smoothie. Remember in this research paper that I read you, this lady went from 5 milligrams of folic acid down to 500 micrograms of methylfolate. And there's all this talk about, and it's all over Amazon, 15 milligrams of methylfolate.
Or more.
And
I've seen.
Or more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I equate it to, if you have to take high doses of any nutrient, then there is something else dirty that you need to clean up. You should not have to force something. When you see someone like your kids and they're trying to force something in the kitchen and you're like, whoa, 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 let me do that. You're going to break it. You handle it the right way. It's effortless. Poof. And it opens or whatever else happens. And so high dose methylfolate, you are forcing a picture and there's something else going on. So you got to figure that out. Are you still drinking? And I'll share a really brief story here. I had a buddy of mine. I was actually, one of my first supplements I was ever trying to design was, for some reason, I don't know why, because I don't even drink, was a hangover supplement. Mm. And so I had all these nutrients in there, methylfolate was in there, and my buddy was taking it, and he was like, oh, this is great. And he was a drinker, but he wasn't like excessive. And then I saw him a couple months later, and he goes, wow, man, that vitamin really works. It helps me drink more.
Oh, shoot. I was like,
That's not where I was going with it.
No.
And then I was like, you know, bud, alcohol is still a toxin. So, you know, it's not really designed to, you know, help you drink more. It's helped to overcome the toxicity of the alcohol, but you're still poisoning yourself. And so months and months of telling him this, he eventually stopped drinking. And he called me one day and I didn't know he stopped drinking. He's in his car, or his truck. He's driving. He's like, Ben, I'm kind of freaking out right now. I was like, what's up? He goes, I'm having auditory hallucinations. Mm. Like, all right, what's up? He goes, I don't know what's up. And I said, well, how much methylfolate are you taking? Same amount. I said, anything else changing life? He goes, oh, not really. Well, I stopped drinking. I said, okay, well, how much methylfolate are you taking? He's like, oh, a couple milligrams. I said, for how long have you stopped drinking? Oh, it's been a month or two. It's like, stop the methylfolate, take some niacin. He happened to have some niacin because he's one of my geeky friends, and auditory hallucinations go away. And I said, you overburdened your MTGFR enzyme from the alcohol. You stopped drinking the alcohol and now you don't need that much methylfolate anymore. So the cleaner you are, the less supplementation you need, even if you have MTGFR genetic variations. And when I see people doing genetic testing or promoting genetic testing and saying that, oh, you have an MTGFR gene variant, you have to buy my supplement, it pisses me off because you are hurting people.
Okay, so that's really interesting about methylfolate, because you do need it, because not enough, you feel terrible, but too much of it, you might feel terrible too. So that's really interesting that you need sort of just the right amount. And really quick, yeah. I just want to talk about this because, yeah, I don't want people to think like, oh, if you have this variant, you're doomed to something, because that's not the case at all. Yeah, once I was aware of mine and I cleaned up how I ate and I cleaned up, you know, my lifestyle factors and focused on exercising and getting my good sleep and, you know, less toxins, I've been fine. I've been great. That is sort of the point, though, of your Dirty Genes book, is don't make your genes dirty. And so can you just sort of give a recap of what that means? Like, how are people making their genes dirty?
So first of all, what is a dirty gene? What do I mean by that? So a dirty gene is a gene that is not working very well. There are many reasons why a gene can't work very well. You could have genetic variation. You can have a nutrient deficiency. You can have a nutrient excess. People don't talk about this enough. Too much of a nutrient can also cause problems because there's a downstream effect of this. You've all seen videos of, let's say, bread being made, and the machine starts going down the conveyor belt, you know, hauling bread very quickly, and it goes in these plastic bags, but the other line is not keeping up. And now you start seeing all this bread falling on the floor because it's not being palletized quick enough. So that same thing happens in your body. It gets overwhelmed if you're over-supplementing. Chemicals in the environment. Oh my God, it's everywhere. Grocery stores. 90% of the crap that's in grocery stores shouldn't be in grocery stores.
Yep.
I mean, it's unbelievable. When I came back from traveling South Pacific and Southeast Asia, I pushed my cart through a Safeway. I think I had a piece of meat and like a fruit. And then I was super excited to buy a Snickers because I hadn't had a Snickers in like 6 months. And I bit into a Snickers and it tasted like crap. And I was like, oh, all right. Chemicals are around us everywhere, every single day. Infections, big one. And you're like, oh yeah, I know that. It's like, I don't get sick. I was like, well, you can have infection in your ear. You can have infections in your nose. You can have infections in your eyes. You can have infection on your skin. And these things will dirty your genes. And that's a sign of a dirty gene if you can't overcome the infection. So chemicals, food, the environment, your mindset. If you have a toxic mindset, you're dirtying your genes. Well, why is that? Because your genes are buried inside of cells. And the outside of your cells and that cell membrane, there's receptors. Your thinking process, Bruce Lipton talks about this, your thinking process triggers certain chemicals to be released from your brain, which then get into your blood, which then bind to receptors, which then tell your genes what to do. Very beginning of our episode here, Carlin, we were talking about that, where you know our cell membranes made out of phosphatidylcholine, supported by methylation, supported by methylfolate, you know, containing the genes. And we have these 18,000 genes or so, and we're the boss of all of them. So mindset, if it's super important. It's like, oh, I grew up in a very toxic home. Well, I'm sorry about that. You know, are you there now? You gotta get counseling. You gotta get that out of you.
Yeah.
It's so important. I had a patient come in years ago who was suicidal. He'd switched from suicidal to threatening to, you know, hurt his wife. He never hurt his wife. His wife was there to vouch for it, and she didn't have any markings of assault or anything. And he goes, yeah, I get so mad. I just throw plates in the direction of her. And then I would be another, you know, later that same day, I'd see a bus and I'd want to step out in front of the bus and kill myself. And I'd be crying and then I'd be crazy. And I said, what'd you eat? What do you eat? He's like, no, I don't want to go there. I said, no, what do you eat? He goes, okay, cookies. Excuse me? No judgment here, bud. Just tell me. And he goes, I eat cake, ice cream, cookies. Okay. Yeah, those are good. What else? Candy. Anything else? No. I said, okay. So you eat cake, cookie, candy, ice cream. Yeah. Nothing else. Nope. He goes, sometimes I get so cold too. I'm like, yeah, I bet. He goes, really? And I said, this is a slam dunk. Sign this life contract here. You're not going to kill yourself. My prescription to you is eat protein with every meal. Still have your treats, still eat your ice cream. That's fine. But I want you eating some protein. No vitamins, no meds. Came back a month later. They both gave me this huge hug. He's like, I'm fine.
Oh my gosh.
So this guy, his genes were filthy dirty because he didn't have the nutrients he needed in order to keep the machines and his employees going. And so you can clean up your employees. You can help them perform. And you're in charge of them. So Dirty Genes is actually a very, very empowering book. My publisher wanted me to call that book Seven Deadly Genes.
Oh, wow.
Did you not?
Wow.
And they're like, oh, it gets so much hype. And I said, that's horrible. I said, there are genes which kill babies that are 2 months in, like the MTHFR double homozygous. They're dead. That's a deadly gene. MTHFR is not a deadly gene.
Right.
COMT is not a deadly gene. I'm not writing that. And I fought them. I think it took me 3 phone calls an hour long to fight, saying, wow, I'm not calling it that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the concept of dirty genes. You can clean them up. You just change your lifestyle. And it starts with the next bite, starts with your next exposure. My desk is 100% wood. My floor is cork. My computer is hardwired. I don't use Wi-Fi. My phone's on airplane mode at night. You know, I'm not crazy. My clothes will be polyester and stuff like that. I'm not extreme. I've got some colleagues of mine who are crazy extreme. I mean, the book's called Dirty Genes, not Perfect Genes.
Yeah. Well, and trying to live if we're trying to live perfect genes, then that causes too much stress on our body, which then causes a whole bunch of other issues because you know what? You can't find perfect clothes out there. So I love your approach, but I also love that you teach on Instagram and social media and wherever you teach that you are empowered to clean up your genes. Like you're not doomed to this. And so that's why I love learning from you because you make it very much so look, you may have this variant or this gene or whatever, but you're not doomed. You have so many things you can do yourself to make them clean.
You've identified a vulnerability that you didn't know your entire life. And when you understand, it's like, if you know you have a frayed rope somewhere, like, oh, all right, I got to tend to that. And as a health professional, it was always a struggle working with patients for compliance. We were always taught in med school, never give more than 3 recommendations, have them very easy, you know, don't overwhelm them. And they're right. I mean, I'm a patient too at times. My compliance can suck. But when your compliance goes way the hell up when you notice you have a genetic vulnerability and you are wired a certain way, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's why I don't drink very much, because when I drink, I feel horrible. And I was on an airplane once, and is there a doctor on the plane? I slink down in my chair. My kids look at me and they give me the scowl. And then I see this lady walk by, and I was like, oh, we're good kids. I don't need to do anything. Later, is there another doctor on the plane? My kids give me the mean look. Like, crap. I get up, I go to the back, and I see this lady laying, you know, or sitting there with her hand on her head, bleeding. And well, it says, first of all, let's get you from a seated position, laying down, you know, let's get some ice going and your knees up and your head elevated, et cetera, to get above your heart and some basic crap, right? And so now I see why they wanted another doctor on the plane. So we do all that. And then I asked her, I said, so are you on any medications or any health conditions that, you know, they're very significant? No health conditions. I said, so have you had anything to drink today? She goes, yeah, I've had some wine. I said, have you had any water today or food? No. I said, well, I think that it's just the wine. I'm super sensitive. She was Asian. And so in my head, I'm thinking, this lady has a dirty MTHFR gene. She has a dirty histamine genes. So I'm going through all this stuff in my head. I want to give her some supplements. And then the paramedics came and took her off the plane. She missed her flight, which sucks because it happened before we flew off the tarmac. But it just goes to show that dirty genes are everywhere. And she dirtied her genes, A, because she's Asian. And so she's very susceptible to aldehyde toxicity. Mm. Aldehydes in wine are high. Histamine breaks down into aldehydes. Wine's very high in histamine. She was dehydrated, which increases the concentration of histamine. So she had dirty genes. She drank alcohol, got to the point where she couldn't have any coordination, fell down, hit her head, and then, you know, off she goes. So dirty genes happens all the time. You get in a fight with your significant other, you've dirtied some genes. You're sitting there on the plane, Carlin, and you smell, it's like somebody's idling mm-hmm. your freaking car.
Yep. Right?
It's horrible. Yep. It's like, really? That's glutathione. So I take my glutathione on airplanes. I have it sitting here on my desk. So my family, we each take one of those glutathione lozenges when on the plane. They go with us everywhere. So dirty genes affects us all day, every day. And my job as a health professional is to inform people what vulnerabilities they have and in what situation are those vulnerabilities a potential problem, and how do you mitigate it through lifestyle, diet, environment, and nutrients. That's what I do.
I love that. Well, I just saw the time, and I could ask you so many more questions about the MTHFR variant and lifestyle factors and things like that. But we better just tell people where they can find you, your supplements, things like that, so that people can learn more from you off this podcast.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram, still shadow banned, but I'm there at Dr. Ben Lynch. And my company is Seeking Health, like looking for it. And I think that's very aptly named, because we are all, most of us are looking for ways to improve our health and identifying why we're sick. So that's why it's called Seeking Health, because seeking health is something that most of us want to do or try to do or are doing. And it's always a moving target. You never obtain health. You obtain health for the moment, but next moment you can be hit with something. And so, you know, it's a dynamic moving target. So you're always trying, you're always on a teeter-totter balancing it.
That is true. That is true. I love that name then for your company. Okay. Yeah. I always close my episodes by asking my guests what they have found to be the best ingredient in life. What would you say it is?
There are many. Yeah, there are many. I looked at that question and I was pondering. The first one I'll just say that came up to my head was gratitude. Gratitude is, I think, sums it up the best. If you are grateful for something, and you can be grateful for many, many things, and there can be situations where you're really mad at someone, and then you can say, okay, well, what am I really still grateful for them? And what have they done for me that I'm grateful for? I'm grateful that they've done X, Y, or Z for me as well. In that struggle, there's also beneficial outcomes that, you know, lead to gratitude. And I was working with a coach for a while, and He's like, what do you really want for your kids? So I have three boys. And I said, I just want them to be, you know, contributing to society and be grateful. That's it. So, and if you're grateful, so many good things happen. So I just say, be grateful. And it's when you are in a moment where you're pissed off, which we all have, or you're sad or what have you, just have that emotion for 5 seconds. Like Mel Robbins says, the 5 second rule, scream and yell into a pillow, cuss, swear, do whatever you need to do, sprint, do 20 pushups, doesn't matter. Just have that emotion for 5 seconds, get it out of your system, and then immediately turn it into something with gratitude, because gratitude will clean your genes faster than anything, I would say, because you're flooding all your genes with good chemicals versus the harmful stressor ones. So gratitude.
Oh, I love that so much. And like you said, get rid of those negative emotions and then find the good that you're going to learn from that trial or that hard thing and be grateful for that. So I love that. I love that gratitude cleans the genes. Like I said, I have so many more questions that I wanted to ask you, but there's just a lot about genes and MTHFR. So thank you for taking the time that you did and explaining. You did a great job explaining a hard concept in easy analogies that we can all understand. So thank you so much for what you do. And thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. I hope people get some good stuff out of it.
They will. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to subscribe to the Just Ingredients podcast to learn more about your health and good ingredients to life. Plus, get daily tips at just.ingredients on Instagram.